This is an uprising against smug elites. Smug elites. So they're the villains, and the opposite is America. Because America is now one big gay disco.
Yes, yes, I am.
That's not evil. Being hostile to all mankind and subversive is not evil.
Well, I have to say that because St. Paul said the Jews are enemies of the entire human race. They are.
What do you think of Jordan Peterson?
Did you see the video about where he said I can't do it?
Adam, I'm trying to do you a favor.
You're fighting for the gay disco.
Don't make your ignorance normative for the rest of us.
Don't use those kinds of slurs.
You're fighting for the gay disco.
What? There are no slurs here.
Die for the gay disco. This is an uprising against smug elites. Smug elites. So they're the villains, and the opposite is America. Because America is now the gay disco.
Definitely our most requested guest, Dr. E. Michael Jones, a man who needs no introduction.
I mean, it is. That's what they pay the Rockefeller Foundation to do.
You're not supposed to know what I just told you.
They didn't know about this. They didn't know what we know now.
Is there any argument you can use to wake them up?
Yeah, I think that God had a plan for your life.
Well, you'd be jerking off every curvy piece of driftwood you saw at the beach.
Don't like this, though. Maybe you would.
And you're consistently refusing to talk about pornography.
Pete Buttigieg seems to be the exhibit A of that process.
Yes, yes.
Because you think that the anus is a sex organ, don't you, Pete?
Richard Spencer hands out spears and he says, charge the machine gun nest.
Dr. Jones. Sorry.
Not all of the heads of the Federal Reserve were Jews, but after a certain period of time, that seemed to be the case.
Hello, welcome to another episode of EMJ Live. Cold spring day in South Bend, Indiana, and the world is heading toward chaos and war. What happened this week, you probably all know, is that Israel attacked Iran. That happened at the beginning of the month when they blew up a consulate, violating international law. Iran promised retaliation, and that's what he did this past week. Sent a wave of drones over. We saw the pictures. CNN immediately jumped in to give you the propaganda spin, and it was generally 99% of the drones failed or were shot down or missed their target or something like that. No one mentioned the fact that the first wave of drones that were sent in were these cheap Shahid, whatever they are. They are slow. They are noisy. It took them 8 hours to get to Israel. This was part of the plan because the Israelis with their American allies had to shoot down a couple hundred of these things, maybe not a couple, maybe between 100 and 200 of them, wasting valuable missiles. Then a second wave came through, more missiles had to go up. And then finally the real missiles came through and they destroyed the two bases from which the Israelis launched their attack on the consulate in Syria. So the mission was a success, but that's not the way it was portrayed. Now Israel, the eternal victim, the country which never does anything wrong, the country which has the right to violate international law and the standards of civilized behavior with impunity, then said it was going to attack, and that's what happened last night. They attacked Isfahan. The early reports on this indicate that nothing got damaged in Isfahan, nothing of significance. I hope I didn't hear any evidence of casualties involved in this. And now the stories are circulating that basically the United States called up Iran and asked them to exercise restraint and not retaliate again. And apparently they're not going to do that. They're going to do what the United States said. Now, why would the United States say this? Because Iran is ready to launch the second strike. They could have done it today. They would have probably sent even more drones in. And what happens now, it's the same strategy that the Russians are pursuing in the Ukraine, is that the arsenal is depleted. We have the classic example of asymmetric warfare here. The United States just spent, I think, $3 billion, one way or the other, defending Israel against an attack that cost $3 million or $30 million on the part of the Iranians. So it's like 10 to 1, the expense it takes to defend, for Israel to defend itself against this attack. And it got through anyway. That's the situation. That's where it stands right now. Biden called up Netanyahu, said, take the win. Apparently, Netanyahu is going to cannot do that. He has to demonstrate to his people, to his supporters, that he's in charge. And that's where it stands right now. Now, are you happy about that? Do you feel that that represents the interest of the American people? Well, I don't. And there are plenty of people there now who are basically have the right, as we established last week, that if you don't like what Israel is doing, they're going to ruin your life. And you don't have anything to say about it. Now, I just wrote an article in which I said that Satanism was the hidden grammar of America. I can say whatever I want about America, the country I live in, and nothing will ever happen to me. If I give the most harmless, the most veiled, the most oblique type of criticism of Israel, I will go to jail if these people have their way. Now, first of all, maybe I won't go to jail. Maybe I'll just be ruined by lawsuits filed by people like Alan Dershowitz or the chubby lesbian kike by the name of Roberta Kaplan. That's her description of herself. She made it deliberately provocative so that if I quote her, then I will get banned from YouTube or something like that because I said what she said. I described her as she described herself. They're not the only ones out there. Let's be honest here. Washington Post just this week, April 16th, they criticized Israel. This Twitter account upended their lives. We're talking about a group here. Danny Mazorka was in bed trying to sleep when the phone started buzzing. An organization dedicated to publicly rebuking critics of Israel had posted on X a clip of Mazorka declaring that radical solidarity with Palestine means not apologizing for Hamas. The 20-second clip from an Instagram live stream rapidly garnered more than 1 billion views. Soon, the group Stop Anti-Semitism was calling Mazorka a Hamas terrorist supporter and tagging their employer, the branding firm Terrakeet of Syracuse, New York. Hundreds of people commented on X, LinkedIn, and email, including one who asked, do you really have anti-Semites like this working for you, Terrakeet? Within a day, Mazorka was fired. A development Terrakeet announced as a reply to Stop Anti-Semitism thread on X 15 hours after the original post. Thank you for your swift action, Stop Anti-Semitism wrote. Who gave these people the right to ruin the lives of anyone who disagrees with our foreign policy on Israel? This is the evidence is just overwhelming here that we've got a serious problem where there is no protection under law against this group of Jewish terrorists who will destroy your life if they don't like what you say. Who gave them this right? Do we have a government that protects the people of the United States of America or not? Shouldn't we be passing laws? Shouldn't one state after another now be passing laws to protect, let's say, the citizens of Indiana from this Jewish predatory behavior, from Jewish lawfare, whatever you want to call it? Well, it turns out that every state in the union is debating bills like this, but they're all debating bills that will further enhance the Jews' ability to destroy your life. The state of Indiana, where I happen to live, is now debating a bill that's going to make it illegal to criticize Israel, as Florida has already done, as South Dakota has already done. South Dakota has 357 Jews. And those Jews have rights that trump everyone else in the state of Minnesota because of Kristi Noem. I don't know. What's her problem? I guess she got they have photos that they're going to release if she doesn't go along with this. Who knows? I'm looking in vain for a representative of government in any state of the union that is ready to defend its own people against Jewish terrorism, Jewish online terrorism of the sort that will deny you a job if you object to Zionist terrorism, where they have the right to kill as many Palestinians as they want, to starve Palestinian children to death, and to murder humanitarian workers who are coming to feed them. And at the same time they're doing that, Jason, what's the guy's name? What's the son-in-law? Kushner is saying that, hey, we're ready to sell beachfront property as soon as we get the bulldozer to clear out those homes of those Palestinians. Okay? It's happening here across the board. This is an assault on our existence as Americans, because I've said before, we don't have anything but freedom of speech. Everything else, identity, culture, whatever it is, has all been taken away from us. This is the last ditch. This is the last thing we have here as Americans. Okay. And so in addition to lawfare, once again, we've got more bills. Okay. Like Bill S-4091, or the Countering Anti-Semitism Act, sponsored by Democratic Senator Jackie Rosen of Nevada and Republican James Lankford of Oklahoma. Under the legislation, the president would appoint a federal coordinator to oversee efforts to counter domestic anti-Semitism and create an interagency task force to coordinate the implementation of federal strategies, according to the text of a bill shared with CNN. The federal coordinator and the new task force will also be required to conduct an analysis of anti-Semitism online. The legislation would also require the designation of a senior official within the Department of Education to serve as an advisor on the agency's efforts to combat discrimination in higher education. Among other actions, the bill would formally establish the month of May as Jewish American Heritage Month in federal law. Does this sound familiar? A year ago, okay, the federal government passed the most comprehensive plan to combat anti-Semitism in the history of the universe. Okay, thanks to Debbie Lipstadt, who was one of those 457 Jews who is part of Biden's minion that runs our country right now. And prominent on that document, and probably the only reason it passed unanimously in Congress, was the statement in bold letters, this bill, whatever, does not have the rule of law. It does not supersede any law, blah, blah, blah. Guess what? And now it does. We fooled you, didn't we? We got all those congressmen to pass something that wasn't supposed to be anything but a nice recommendation. And now the ADL is involved and they're going to make it a law. And you, if the lawfare crowd don't get you, if Stop Anti-Semitism doesn't get you for expressing your constitutional rights to criticize the behavior of some country over there in the Middle East, well, then this bill will. This is an impossible situation. Why isn't everyone talking about this? Why aren't people out on the streets overturning cars? Why isn't there general uproar throughout the United States because of this attempt to silence the last right we have after all the assaults on this right that was involved in YouTube and the whole banning on platforms on the internet that took place in 2019? It's only getting worse, okay? As a good example of this, my good friend Gemma O'Doherty, who had taken a vacation for a while, returned to Ireland, and she was promptly arrested. Gemma is a journalist. I've been on her show many times. She's been on my show. A courageous lady who thinks that as a journalist, she should be exposing corruption and telling the truth. Well, that changed a while ago in Ireland, about 10 years ago, when the big company she worked for was bought out with the help of the Clintons, and the new regime took over and immediately fired her. Okay, all right, you don't want to hire me? I'll go on and do my own. So Gemma started her own newspaper after a distinguished career in journalism over there and started doing stories, and then suddenly the Irish version of Lawfare kicked in, and she was subjected to ridiculous libel suits, trumped up libel suits. She is claiming the third parties are funding these libel suits. That's illegal in Ireland. So who are these third parties? Okay, let's talk about the judge here in her case. This is an article written on a previous case. The judge noted evidence put before the court where the defendant had made comments in online talks and videos about Ms. Campbell, including that she was a bad mother, as well as allegedly untrue comments about her son and the circumstances of his death. So it's a complicated story, but it's basically excess death story. Had to do with COVID. Gemma was one of the courageous leaders against the whole COVID lockdown in Ireland. They trump up this, what is a libel suit that would have been laughed out of court anyplace else, but apparently this court in Ireland. And so now here she is. This is the judge. This is the judge in her case, okay? Also noted that Miss O'Doherty had made comments in her online lectures where she spoke about Ms. Campbell that were anti-Semitic and engaged in Holocaust denial. Oh, wait a minute. I thought this was a libel case. What's this got to do with Holocaust denial? You want to know about Holocaust denial? Do you want to know about the Holocaust? I wrote a book about it. It's called The Holocaust Narrative. You can get it at fidelitypress.org. If you read it, you will understand the whole story here, because this story has been weaponized as a club to beat you into submission. And here, out of the blue, in what is just a libel case that has no merit whatsoever, the judge brings up Holocaust now. Wait a minute, this is unprecedented. Wait a minute, maybe it's not unprecedented. Every time one of the members of cabinet got brought before the Senate, and the senators like Josh Hawley said to Alejandro Mayorkas, "You're not doing your job." What did he say? "I have relatives who died in the Holocaust." What did Anthony Blinken say when he was confronted with the catastrophe that is our foreign policy? "I have relatives who died in the Holocaust." What did Merrick Garland say when Josh Hawley asked him why he's prosecuting Catholic pro-lifers from Pennsylvania in a case that got laughed out of court within 15 minutes? And what did he say? "I have relatives who died in the Holocaust." Are you starting to see a pattern here? When are we going to have protection? When are we, the American people, going to have protection against this group of cultural terrorists? When is that going to happen? When are the laws of the United States of America going to protect American citizens? Who's going to stand up to this tyranny? That's my rant. Let's hear what you have to say.
All right. Hello, everybody. Once again, happy Friday. This is the voice of Mike Bajakis, Dr. Jones, assistant. And here's some rules for you guys so we can get the call-ins going. Call-ins are made via our Telegram, via our Twitter at emichaeljones1. And Telegram is going to be our backup. If you request to speak, I'll call on you, and do not forget to unmute yourself. And then later in the stream, we'll read off text questions from the various chats we have from the various platforms. Quick rules, try to keep questions on subject, try to keep to one question at a time, and be respectful of time. Here we go. Let's go to Twitter. Who do I got to go? Alejandro. Go ahead, Alejandro.
Hello, Dr. Jones. Can you hear me?
I can.
It's always a pleasure to speak with you, sir. I just wanted to know your comments on what Scott Ritter said for Sputnik when he said that Iran has reestablished its deterrence in the Middle East. And on the other hand, Colonel Douglas MacGregor said that he's afraid that Israel would use nukes against Iran. Thank you.
First of all, I agree with what Scott Ritter said. He gave a good analysis of the attack. Iran's attack on Israel was successful. It clearly established that their hypersonic missiles, if that's what they were, got through. It established the rationale behind the attack, which allowed them to give this propaganda story that 90% of the missiles had been shot down. It was a good analysis. Douglas MacGregor, what was the question about Douglas MacGregor again?
Well, he said he's afraid that Israel would use retaliation, probably with nukes against Iran.
Look, if Israel... What is the whole point of this exchange here, if we analyze it? It's that there's a very delicate balance here. Israel is not the omnipotent country, the undefeated military that everybody thinks it is. Iran basically has Israel checkmated now. Israel cannot invade Iran, but Iran can invade Israel because Hezbollah is right at the border there. There is no country bordering Israel, Iran, that Israel can use. So they are checkmated. Now, if they go nuclear, I will predict the next city that goes, and it's going to get through, the missiles are going to get through, Tel Aviv will go up in smoke. And that will be the end of the Zionist entity in Palestine. So I know these people have this kind of suicide complex. It's called the Samson option. I know that they did this at Masada, and they think that was heroic, killing themselves at the time of the Roman destruction of the temple. But I don't think the world's going to let them do it. And I think the United States is now in the process of reining Israel in, and I don't think it's going to happen. It's not going to happen. Now, because they will go out of existence. Iran could probably take a nuclear attack. Israel cannot. It's too small. Israel's army cannot defeat Iran's army. And the United States is now getting more and more reluctant to back up every reckless adventure that Israel gets involved in. So I don't think it's going to happen.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Jones.
You're welcome.
We have faith in the future. As you say, that God is in charge of world history.
God is in charge.
All right. Next, we're going to go to Andrew Horval, a good friend of ours. Go ahead, Andrew. Are you there, Andrew?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, good day, sir. The things that you're saying are nothing new. I'm currently reading and preaching through the book of Acts. And I don't know how anybody can read through the book of Acts or much of the New Testament for that matter without seeing many of the points that you've made today and in the past. You continue to articulate these things over and over very well. For instance, in Acts chapter 17 and verse 5, it says, "But the Jews, which believe not, moved with envy, took unto them certain lewd fellows of the baser sort and gathered a company and set all the city on an uproar. And assaulted the house of Jason and sought to bring them out to the people." So my question is, how long do you think it will be before it becomes acceptable on a large scale to call much of the New Testament, if not all of it, anti-Semitic?
It's already happening. First of all, there's a court case in Finland right now. This is a Finnish woman, grandmother, who was also a member of the Finnish parliament, who is reading chapter on Romans as a condemnation of homosexuality. That's going to be the thin end. It's going to happen in Canada too. This is the progress of the Antichrist. The more power they get, the more reckless they become. The more reckless they become, the more they create opposition. The more they're going to they're stepping toward their doom, and they're losing their power. So we have to have faith as this happens, that God is in charge of this, and that he will use his power to bring about this justice, because God hears the cry of the poor. And if there's ever the cry of the poor, it's what's happening to the Palestinians. So we have to be patient. We can't panic. We can't go crazy with fear or any of these things, because these are trying times, and you have to keep your balance and keep your eye on the goal and understand that God's in charge.
Thank you, sir. Keep the faith.
You too.
Let's try. Was it Prashant Thomas McCleric? You there?
Yeah. Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can.
Good. Hi, Dr. Jones. Thanks for your work. My concern is it's around certain sects of the dark Jewish population who want to destroy a lot of humanity and have the rest of them serve them. And my concern is about what's going on currently. If you do a search right now and put three things in, Israel, Pfizer, and mRNA, you will find a lot of stories. I found that there's potentially going to be the biggest Pfizer plant in history built in Israel. Well, we know this mRNA technology is the most dangerous shot ever put into humans, causing much death, much injury, and possibly quite a lot of future death and injury. I've also come to hear that some people say that it was genetically engineered so as not to affect certain elements of the Jewish tribe, which I don't know if that's true or not. But I do understand, and if you do that search, you'll find out that there's a deep connection between Pfizer, the mRNA technology, and Israel. So I don't think it's a very good sign. And I'm just wondering, I know it's not your specialty, but I wonder if you could comment on that.
Yeah, Robert Kennedy got into a lot of trouble because he said what you said about the DNA and Jews, or not affecting Jews, or something having to do with Jews, with the Ashkenazi. Okay, and he got in big trouble, and the mainstream Jewish-controlled media attacked him as an anti-Semite, and that's when Shmuley Botik showed up and played the good cop to the media bad cop, and Robert Kennedy, he said Kennedy was not an anti-Semite. Kennedy was so relieved, he picked up an Israeli flag and marched down Fifth Avenue waving the flag. That shows you how powerful this lobby is. It also shows you that Robert Kennedy doesn't even know when he wrecked his own operation. And he doesn't even understand the prime issue, a political issue of our day, which is basically Jewish control. Now, you've pointed out one of the main factors in Jewish control, which is Big Pharma. And Pfizer is a big part of Big Pharma. And if they're building a plant in Israel, well, there's another connection there. But it's just one more aspect, and the people who, again, disagree get in trouble. This time because it's medical disinformation. Well, let's take the big picture now. Who's better off now? The people who got the vaccines or the people who did not get the vaccines? The people who got the vaccines are suffering all sorts of problems. The people who did not get the vaccines are suffering no problems. They got over it. It wasn't a big deal. There's even a continent that is in this regard, basically Africa, where they were too poor to buy the vaccines, where the leaders didn't like it, and they didn't get vaccinated en masse, and they're doing better than anybody in the world now. So this is the information we have now. We were all taken by surprise by the COVID pandemic. Now we know what's going on. It's not going to happen again. There are already state legislatures who are basically saying that they will not adopt the World Health Organization rules that they're trying to cook up for us. So look, part of life is you got to take a hit sometimes. You got to get knocked down sometimes. But after that, you got to get up again. And you don't walk into the same punch twice. And that's precisely happened. We had to learn this in the expensive school of experience. Once we learned it, we're not going to go back. And the political process is going to have to take account of that. This is just part of life, because political process has to follow consciousness. And what I expressed is consciousness. And there's no going back. You can't not unknow what you know. That's the situation the world's in right now.
Thank you, Dr. Jones.
You're welcome.
Okay, moving on here. Let's go to Andrew B. Go ahead, Andrew B.
Hey there, Dr. Jones. Got a question for you. Who do you think is behind the, or who's funding the slaughter of Nigerians, Christian Nigerians?
I'm sorry, you're going to have to say it slower. Who's behind what?
The slaughter of Christians in Nigeria. Who's funding that?
Well, there's been a civil war in Nigeria for ever since I was 20 years old. The war in Biafra was basically Nigeria is a British colony, and British colonies, like every single colony in Africa, was drawn on in a map in Berlin in 1888 by people who never been to Africa themselves and knew nothing about the geography or the demographics of the place. And so what happened with most British colonies is that they left behind two groups that don't get along with each other. The Muslims to the north in Nigeria do not get along with the Catholics, largely Catholics, to the south. And the breaking point came in 1968 when they had a civil war. It was called the Biafran War. They tried to starve the people to death. And the result was a stalemate, and Biafra was not allowed to secede. And you've got the status quo ante now, where Nigeria is run by corrupt politicians who are paid off by the West. Sonny Abacha was prime minister of Nigeria. His wife showed up at the airport with 17 suitcases. When the customs official opened them, they were filled with dollar bills, not, you know, well, I don't know what denomination, but money, cash from the United States. This is the fundamental problem. The oil companies rule Nigeria to their benefit. And the Nigerians have yet to be able to break through to a government that represents the Nigerian people rather than the oil companies.
You know, Tucker kind of crossed the line to his credit last week about how U.S. foreign policy is anti-Christian. One thing that is still a mystery to me is what happened to the Christian Palestinians? Were they killed? Were they just pushed to Lebanon? Where did they go?
Well, that Tucker had that priest on. Did you see? I don't know whether you saw that.
We went from 99% of the population is gone, and no one dare put an account as to what happened to them.
Well, they were driven into exile largely. I mean,
the Christians in Palestine.
Right, the Christians as well. Yeah, I mean, if they're Palestinians. The Israelis don't care whether they're Christians or Muslims. They're Palestinians, and they're to be ethnically cleansed. And so they were driven out. I don't know where they went. There weren't as many Christians as there were Muslims. We know where the Muslims went. They went into concentration camps in Lebanon and various countries in exile. The whole point of what's happening in Gaza right now is to drive them out again. The group that are left, drive them into some desert camp in the desert in the Negev, where they were all starved to death. So it's nothing new here. The Christians the mass media portrays Palestinians as Muslims, but there were obviously lots of Christians there. And give credit to Tucker for putting this man on, giving voice to the Christian Palestinians who have been driven out. He was immediately attacked. But as I said, you only get flack when you're over the target. So thanks to Tucker Carlson for some honest journalism there.
Okay, thank you, Andrew B. Let's go to, there's not many people requesting on Twitter. We're going to try this nice Russian guy again. And if no one requests, we might jump to Telegram for another question or two. And then we're going to get to questions from chat. So everyone in the various chats, Rumble, Odyssey, Cozy, start asking your questions, typing them in. Okay, let's go to the Russian guy whose name I cannot pronounce. Let's try you again. Are you there?
I am here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good.
This is Patrick. I have a couple of things I want to talk to you about. The one that you are mentioning the most, though, is this notion where you can't say any bad things about the Jews or they'll call you a Holocaust denier and ruin your reputation. There is such a thing in the Talmudic law called Misura law, M-E-S-I-R-A-H. And that is a law where you cannot, one Jew cannot accuse another Jew in a public court, non-Jewish Gentile court, of crimes that would otherwise harm the greater Jewish group. And this was done back in the 50s to Father Leonard Feeney. If you read his works, he was dealing with this the notion that I think it was Brandeis University wanted a Catholic chapel with the Holy Eucharist in the chapel, and Father Feeney's group was protesting this, and gangs of Jewish youth. There was a gang called the Hipsters in the 50s, a Jewish gang, that went out and they beat up Father Feeney's group. They did not want any opposition to the Jewish question. And that was one comment I wanted to make. The next one, a question for you. Did you know that Kristi Noems, the governor of South Dakota, has also passed a bill making it unlawful to protest the pipeline, from the oil pipeline from the Bakken region in her state? And there is a pipeline route going all the way to Superior, Wisconsin, which is the diocese I'm in, is Superior, where they plan to have the ability to ship 3 million barrels of oil a day out of Superior. And this, I feel, is also another thing that contributes to the whole Russian-Ukrainian conflict, which is over oil and pipeline material. But I just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you. Thank you. Father Feeney is a man who is little known in American life, and probably little known in Catholic life as well. He was a chaplain. He was in Boston. He had a lot of influence on students at Harvard in the early 1950s. One of them was Avery Dulles, a son of John Foster Dulles. A nephew of Alan Dulles, first head of the CIA, who converted to Catholicism and became an influential cardinal in the Catholic Church. Feeney was shut down by the Cardinal Cushing of Boston for dubious reasons, I think. Feeney said that there was no salvation outside the Catholic Church, which is true. But the quarrel was over what he meant by that or how he interpreted that, and they didn't like the way he interpreted it, so they excommunicated him and his group, which I think one group reconciled, the other did not. But this was about the Jewish question, because it was Feeney, I think, who said that having a television is like having a Jew in your living room. I think that's true.
Most of his writings during the 50s were about Jewish control over Catholic life.
Right.
And I think that is the main reason. There was even an FBI investigation during the time because they were saying he was inciting hatred against Jews.
Right. This is also Cushing was compromised because he was constantly in debt to the Vault, which is the big power broker in Boston. And once you're in debt, they call the tune, and so he was.
And the Jesuits, he was a Jesuit, and they turned on him. He yes. was the main editor, the editor of America Magazine in the 40s.
Right.
He's in 40s.
Yeah. So we had a whole change of of attitudes acceptable at what attitudes toward the Jews are acceptable and what are not. And they got hammered out in battles like the battle over Father Feeney. And we have those consequences to this day, so that now the Jews are, they're never going to be satisfied. The whole purpose of Catholic-Jewish dialogue is to erode the Catholic faith, to get Catholics to make concessions, and eventually have the Catholics ban their own gospel, which I've already talked about. It came close this year when they issued a statement saying that if you listen to the gospel of St. John, you may become an anti-Semite. So at some point, I said, you determined before, I said, based on that movie Zulu, you know, who's going to be the first Zulu across the line? And that was for political commentary in the United States. Something's going to happen. Some prominent figure is going to break through the line and articulate the problems that I've talked about. And he will probably be elected because there'll be such a pent-up audience there. The same thing is true of the Catholic Church. At some point, some prominent figure is going to articulate a position on the Jews that is consonant with Catholic tradition. And at that point, the spell will be broken. But we're still waiting. We're still waiting for
like
that.
Charles, like Father Charles Coughlin, he was out there criticizing them getting us into wars. He called out Jack Warner. And then soon after that, Jack Warner had a lot to do with NBC. And soon after that, they hired Fulton Sheen to come on the scene, who preached kind of more of a watered down version, trying to make reconciliation between Jews and Catholics. And he was really kind of a watered down, you know, just the basically the kosher, acceptable Catholic prelate that had a voice on the mainstream media.
Yeah, I agree.
And Father Feeney actually had. Was on his Catholic Hour as a substitute at a certain point.
Yeah.
So there was some relationship going on there. It's worth looking into.
There's right. Someone needs to write a book about Father Coughlin. The Archdiocese of Detroit didn't even mention him in the 300th anniversary history. They have diocese by diocese. They get to the little flower, and Coughlin's name is not even mentioned. The most famous priest in the history of the Catholic Archdiocese, and he's not even mentioned. So it's inevitable. It's going to happen sooner or later, and we will get back to the traditional position, and this will seem like a nightmare in retrospect.
All right. Thank you for your question there, and there's some good questions there. Let's jump to the chats. We're going to go to Cozy Rumble and read off your guys' chats. Let's start here with Cozy. Dr. Jones asked, Dr. Jones, is Pope Francis turning Catholicism into a global homo cult? Could he be a Satanist or possessed by demons? A yes or no? That's all you need, a yes or no.
I'll tell you. I'll give you the bottom line here. I'll take a bad pope any day of the week over a self-appointed pope. Next question.
All right, next question. User Uncozy asks, do you think the Biden administration will declare climate change or declare a climate, quote, emergency before the election?
No. They got too much on their plate already. They cannot get involved in this. Climate change is dying. The whole thing is dying. This is a classic example of things that oligarchs use to control everyone, like, you know, Prince Charles, or now he's King Charles. This was one of his favorite things. It's a polite way of basically saying, just shut up and do what you're told. Basically now to the farmers in Holland, all throughout Europe, they've all been, because of the European Union, they all have been subjected to draconian laws that are going to destroy agriculture. And they are protesting. We've got so many protests, but I mean, it's not going to go away until you have stability. And stability will only come in if you respect the rights of private property and respect the rights, some type of subsidiarity here that allows farmers to operate the way they've been operating for years. Now, if you want to deal with this You know, obviously new technologies come along, and if they're proved to be bad, then they have to be removed. You know, Roundup, that type of thing. Monsanto was deluged with lawsuits because of Roundup. But it's not going to be solved by just turning every like 40% of the farmland into what? Into swamp or something like that? That's not rational agriculture policy. That's tyranny. That's global control. So they're going to have to back off. Back off.
From Lemon Squeezy 01 on Rumble. Hello, Dr. Jones. It has recently come to my attention that calling the Jews our, quote, elder brothers, end quote, in the faith was an invention of JP2. What has been the church's historic view?
Well, I think the Jews got, but there may have been something sly going on here, because if you look at the Bible, the elder brothers are always bad. So Cain was the elder brother. And so maybe he was pulling the wool over their eyes or tricking them in some way or other. Elder brother is not a biblical concept. The Jews were never described as our elder brothers. Once you get to the New Testament, the Jews are, St. Paul said, these are the people who killed Christ, and they are enemies of the entire human race. That's always been the tradition. If you read that, we're going through the Acts of the Apostles now in this post-Easter period. St. Paul is a good example of this so-called elder brother and the trajectory of an elder brother. He was a ferocious persecutor of the way, which was the Christian religion. He didn't stay in that position. God knocked him off his horse, blinded him, and then when he woke up, he became a fierce defender of the Catholic faith. That's it. That's it. This elder brother stuff is crazy. It's a delusional notion that has been contradicted by the course of history, unless you want to refer to Cain and Abel, and then I guess it is prophetic. But it's not part of the patrimony of Catholic tradition. It's a new idea, and it has failed to describe the situation accurately.
On Rumble, we got Teletess asks, did the Jews have anything to do with the Rwandan genocide?
I don't know.
Okay, we don't know. Moving on, what do we got? From SS Tiger, can Catholics and Protestants unite to fight Jewish supremacy together?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All of the things, I'm getting Protestants inviting me on their shows, and we're engaging in dialogue that is leading to some type of illumination on their part. Just had an English woman was on, she had me on her show. She's living in France now, but so I started talking about the Reformation. She had never heard of my explanation of the Reformation. She had never heard that. She was completely subjected to Whig history. So, you know, I had the same thing with the Amish, and an Amish guy who we buy milk from him. Not going to give you his name. But so that the FDA doesn't come after him. But I said, did you know about Munster? No. What's Munster? You didn't know about the Anabaptist community in Munster? No. Well, this is the beginning. You're an Anabaptist. All your folks come from there. It was later on, these people came. There wasn't Munster. All the people in Munster were horny Catholic priests and nuns. But after a generation, they got obliterated by it. That brought the Catholics and the Protestants together. And I'm saying the same thing is true right now. What do we share in common? We're Americans. Okay, and we have to come to some type of coherent position to oppose the people who don't like us, namely the Jews. They think we're Christians. They call us Christians. They call us goyim. They call us white boys, whatever you want to do, and they hate us, and they want to destroy us. And we need to unite and reassert the fact that Americans should have a say in how America is run. We don't have a say anymore in how this country is run. All the evidence I provided you today is irrefutable. Every single member of Congress has been bought off by the Israel lobby. This is an intolerable situation, and we're going to have to break through it, and we're going to have to come up with some type of united understanding of what it means to be an American. I'm writing a book on American identity right now, okay? I hope that helps resolve this issue. But the issue is right now, we got people on the left who say it's okay, they're against Israel, but it's okay to kill babies in the womb if it's abortion. And then on the right, you have the people who are pro-Israel, and they say they're against abortion. Well, this is simple enough. This is not brain surgery. There is one consistent position. We have to be against killing in both forms. So I'm proposing a party that is against killing babies in the womb and against killing babies with F-16s. Is that so hard to understand? And the eradication, the elimination of Jewish influence from top to bottom from our culture so that we can have a government that really represents the interests of the American people rather than the interests of this genocidal cult in over there called Israel. Yes, I think it's doable. I think it's not only doable, it's necessary. It has to happen.
And just kind of follow up with that, if Protestants and Catholics unite to fight the Jews, is this going to kind of naturally lead to conversion of the Jews? Do they have to convert to Catholicism?
No, this conversion of the Jews is not a political concept. I'm dealing with political concepts right now. Conversions of the Jews is necessary. They should all get baptized. You're absolutely right. That's the purview. That is the duty. That is the job of religion. That is not the job of the state. The job of the state is to protect the American people, both from foreign enemies, but also from domestic enemies. And it turns out they're the same group here. This is a threat to what I talked about today. These bills, these anti-Semitism bills, these organizations like antisemitism.com or whatever, Stop Anti-Semitism, people like Alan Dershowitz, all of these things, they are threats to the well-being of the American people. We have no defense right now under law against these threats. That's an intolerable situation. We need a government that will defend us against these predators who are out. If they don't like what you say, they ruin you. Dershowitz said it himself. If he doesn't like what you say, you're going to end up sleeping on the sidewalk. They're exactly his words. No one should have this power in this country. And we need government to step up and protect the American people against these predators. It's that simple.
On Rumble, we have a question from PSUMJ. In France, I sense the French have given up and surrendered to Satan. Do you agree the French have lost their identity, meaning their religion?
Well, obviously, if you're talking about the French Revolution, you're talking about a colossal trauma that was introduced into French life, which has never been resolved. It has the same status in France that the Reformation had in Germany. It divided the country, and it's still not resolved. The only resolution that is happening right now in Germany is that basically Protestantism is evaporating. That's the solution. I don't see anything along those lines like happening in France. This whole spirit of liberty, fraternity, equality that led to the murder of the king and led to, as Civiltà Cattolica said in 1890, it led to the Jewish domination of France. Because the people rebelled against their own Christian identity. It was an act of suicide. So they haven't resolved it. They haven't resolved it. And whether they do or not is beyond my power to explain right now. I think Macron is hated by the majority of the French people. I think he's got delusions of grandeur on the international stage, and I think his days are numbered. He's representing something he has no power to back up.
From Colin the Crusader on Cozy, Dr. Jones, Candace is talking about the ethnic cleansing of Germans after the war. Has she read Culture Wars?
That's a good question. Mike just brought that up. Candace, if you read it, I'd be happy to come on and discuss it on your show, because it is, if you want to read it, subscribe to Culture Wars. It's the latest issue of Culture Wars. The story that no one knows, the ethnic cleansing of 13 million Germans, because Stalin wanted Eastern Poland. And so the Germans had to give up Eastern Germany for that. No one knows the story. It is the story that really explains what happened during World War II, after World War II, and why the Holocaust narrative is necessary. So go to culturewars.com, subscribe, and read that article.
On Rumble, and Jane333 asks, please have Dr. Jones address the anti-Semitism of G.K. Chesterton. Thank you.
Yes. It's not anti-Semitism. He understood that. Now you've got a situation where, who's the guy, I forget his name, the guy who wrote the book on, he wrote a biography of Hilaire Belloc. He wrote a good book on the, all these names are avoiding. Anyway, he was a racist, went to jail for racial incitement in England, and now has come back, and he concedes that Belloc was an anti-Semite. He wasn't an anti-Semite. This is people during the 1920s talking the way people should be talking right now, talking about the Bolshevism, basically. You think something as drastic as 1919, the Russian Revolution, 1917, the 1919 revolutions throughout Europe, the Soviet Republic of Bavaria, all this type of upheaval, people are not going to talk about it. Winston Churchill talked about it. He was a pawn of the Jews, if there ever was one, and he talked about the dangers of Jewish Bolshevism at this time. Talking about that is not anti-Semitism. It's ridiculous, and Joe, whatever his name is, should be ashamed of himself for falling into that trap. Calling Belloc an anti-Semite wasn't.
Okay, let's see. From Simos, with a crisis of masculinity in the West, what do you think of writing a book on it? Do any writers / books come to mind for us to explore on the topic?
Yeah, I've been dealing with these people, you know, privately. I met with them privately about the whole men's movement. I just did a podcast with Will Spencer. He was involved in it. It's symptomatic of the wreck of our culture that was brought about largely through feminism, the weaponization of the relations between the sexes. And I can write on anything under the sun, but personally, this is not my issue. I got married when I was 21. My wife was 20 years old when I got married. I didn't do that because I was a saint. I wasn't even attending church at that point. In retrospect, I think I became a Jew when I was 19 years old and didn't know it. So I'm not claiming that it was moral heroism on my part. It was the culture. The culture hadn't been broken at that point. Everybody had an understanding of what it meant to be a man and what it meant to be a woman. And everybody pretty much acted on it. Until the Jews got involved with the Cultural Revolution, and they disrupted these roles. Feminism, classic example of what I'm talking about. The left engaging in sexual liberation, creating angry ladies who were rightly felt that they had been used sexually by these revolutionaries, and then they take it out on the entire world, on the entire culture, it gets spun that way. This is all what happened, and we're talking a couple generations down the road now where people, they're not rebelling. In order to rebel, you have to know what you're rebelling against, and they've lost that thread. And so it's got a group of people where the men and women are trying to figure out, well, how do I act as a man and a woman? It's an important issue, but I don't think I'm the guy that's supposed to write that book. I think someone else is supposed to write it.
All right, it's 6:02. Do you want one more?
One more.
All right, from Breadman on Cozy. Is it generally better to not discuss JQ stuff inside one church and community?
You have to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. You can't suppress the most pressing issue of our day. If you try to do that, you'll become neurotic, and you'll end up doing yourself no favors. You have to understand how to go about doing this, how to bring this up. And in a sense, what is the point of all these discussions we've been having online? It's to give you the vocabulary or the openings that will allow this discussion to take place on a local level. So if your church is, you know, you're a Christian Zionist church in Oklahoma, and you get to the coffee and donuts afterwards, bring up the fact that abortion is a fundamental Jewish value. Are they going to kick you out of your church? If they do, fine. It's you know, go become a Catholic at that point. But I mean, this is the way, this is the type of sensitivity and sophistication you need. You should always begin with some factual type of statement. Don't begin with a conclusion, begin with the fact. And that is a fact. 400 Jewish organizations said abortion is a fundamental Jewish value. Can't get around that fact. And then let the discussion begin there and then see where it goes. That's the way I would do it.
Okay, there we have it. Thanks again. This is EMJ Live. We're doing this every Friday at 5 Eastern Standard Time. If you're not already, subscribe to Culture Wars Magazine at culturewars.com. All of Dr. Jones' books can be bought at fidelitypress.org. Subscribe to Telegram, The Cozy, The Gab, Rumble. Definitely Rumble. You guys are killing it with those numbers. Keep that up. Everyone who's watching on Rumble, subscribe to us. And quick announcement. On Monday, on the Kill Stream, we're going to have E. Michael Jones discuss the Congress bill with Ron Unz at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. That's going to be live. So you guys don't miss that. Kill Stream, Ethan Ralph. It's going to be good. Those are my announcements. Dr. Jones, what do you got? Last words.
I discovered the cure for wasting your time on the internet. Even if it's benign and it's not pornography or whatever it is, it's a waste of time. You waste the time for video games, the whole thing. It's called the book. The book is really a good way to spend your time. So buy a book. Go to fidelitypress.org and buy a book and start on your way to curing this internet addiction.
All right, there you guys. That's it. We'll see you next Friday. God bless.